Hello and welcome back to the Villa Filler podcast. I'm here as always with my good friend Dan Wiseman. Dan, I don't even need to ask how you're doing today because I know it's transfer rumour season. Villa Filler's cooking, man. First one of the January window. Let's go.
I'm so happy, mate. I'm so happy. This is what we do best.
This is where we cook. And I mean, it's a really exciting name. We're definitely not the first to cover it, but hopefully you guys will stick with us and listen to our insight, because Jeremy Frimpong of Bayer Leverkusen has been linked not just with Aston Villa, but with a host of Europe's top clubs. And this is a player who we've spoken about before on wish lists, really, mate, haven't we, on the podcast, and been like, wouldn't it be great? This would be a fantastic signing. Don't think it will ever happen. And now we're in this situation where it doesn't look like Bayer Leverkusen are going to sell in January. But if we can hold out until summer to reinforce on that right-hand side of the field, where I think you and I both agree, mate, we need reinforcements, this is the guy at the top of your wish list, isn't it?
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. It's interesting that kind of two of the heaviest links so far, very early days, obviously, in the transfer window, but two of the biggest links so far have both been fullbacks. We've seen Marcos Acuña come back to life on the left-hand side. But Jeremy Frimpong is a really interesting link. Very exciting. I think we just started there, right, mate? Like, very, very exciting. At this point, Bayer Leverkusen have kind of become some quasi-feeder club for Villa. Yeah. Like, Leon Bailey, Moussa Diaby, and now Jeremy Frimpong. And it's those last two names that make this particularly interesting, because should we sign Jeremy Frimpong, he would link up on the same wing as Moussa Diaby once again, a pairing that was so fruitful for Leverkusen last season. However, this is not a cheap deal, mate. This is not a cheap deal. Not only would he command a huge amount in wages, he's one of the premier attacking right backs right now in European football. Bayer Leverkusen, Xabi Alonso's Bayer Leverkusen, have taken the Bundesliga by a storm this season. They're currently sat top in the league. They have no reason whatsoever to sell this player. He's in contract until 2028. So any deal here, if it is to be done in January or the summer, is going to take up a very, very significant chunk of our budget. You're looking at a club record fee, no doubt, for this player. He can play as a right winger in possession. He likes to get really, really high at the pitch. He's a real goal threat. He's kind of the ultimate evolution of the modern day fullback. As I say, would form a formidable partnership with Moussa Diaby. But this just feels that when you consider our winter spend over the last three seasons, 26 mil in 2023, 27 mil in 2022, and just 14 million in 2021, this kind of deal would blow those figures out of the water.
It would, mate, wouldn't it? And I think the reports are saying, mainly by Fabrizio Romano, it seems that there is a 40 million euro release clause, but it can only be activated in the summer transfer window rather than in this winter market that we're in right now, which I think will, I don't know if that's to sort of encourage clubs to sort of splurge big, but like these kind of transfers for whoever, you know, in world football, they don't really tend to happen unless they're absolutely necessary and unless there is, you know, such a demand, which I believe there is to a certain extent with Frimpong, but I don't think that we will be bidding any higher than, you know, the sort of rumoured release clause in January, because why? Like, I think he sees out the season with Leverkusen. And I think it's important to sort of provide the context of what he's doing, mate, because the Bundesliga is probably at its most interesting than it has been for the past decade, really, right? This title race is enthralling. Xabi Alonso is working wonders with Bayer Leverkusen, already touted naturally to be the next Real Madrid manager, which is, you know, something I'm sure all Real Madrid fans, yourself included, Dan, would welcome, because he's sort of at the forefront of this next generation of actually truly great players and, you know, sort of becoming truly great managers and, you know, really innovative system where it's like a 2-2-5-2. The build-up play is so interesting, you know, when you watch Leverkusen, and, you know, we talk a lot of, I think we sort of all roll our eyes a little bit when we talk about inverted fullbacks and when you look at players like what Trent Alexander-Arnold is doing and sort of evolving into. But Frimpong really is the sort of epitome of inversion, isn't he, mate? Like, he gets high up the field. He helps create overloads in that midfield. He's got explosive pace, fantastic right foot as well. You know, he's constantly getting involved in the sort of creation of goals. And, you know, I mean, this season already in the Bundesliga alone, 5 goals, 6 assists for a fullback, it's like, it's almost unheard of. His output is scarily high. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, I think tactical flexibility is something that, you know, comes to mind because, as you rightly said, mate, he can play almost anywhere down that right-hand side. And that's what we sort of want from these players right now. And do I think he's that different in profile to Matty Cash? No. But is he better than Matty Cash? Undoubtedly. Undoubtedly, mate.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, mate. In fact, there's probably only one fullback that has outshone him really in Europe this season, and it's the fullback that plays on the other wing by Leverkusen in Alex Grimaldo, whose output has just been ridiculous. But yeah, those two fullbacks are really the axis on which this Bayer Leverkusen team has formed. Super excited. I'm really excited to see kind of how this develops. As I say, you know, we're also apparently looking back in for Marcos Acuna on the other side, so it's interesting that we're kind of still looking to refresh these bring back kind of roles, provide some depth, provide some options, players that can do different things tactically. So yeah, it's really, really interesting this one, mate. But it does feel like a summer deal. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. And I think, like, at the end of the day as well, you have to sort of take a look at it from his perspective as well. Obviously, Bayer Leverkusen currently sit top of the Bundesliga, 42 points. Bayern Munich do have a game in hand, but obviously they can't catch them if they win. You know, we're talking about the difference of ending the season with a winner's medal and potentially not. And, you know, the devil's advocate says that Villa are also in a title race too, and that he could join Aston Villa and end the season with a title. But, I mean, it looks, I don't want to say dead set, I don't wish to curse Bayer Leverkusen. I wish to continue the fruitful relationship that we seem to have with this club, and signing players and all of that. But they look almost nailed on. Like, there's just something that isn't right about Bayern Munich, like 100%. Like, this is the year that Leverkusen break that Bundesliga monopoly. And I think it's totally understandable for him to want to wait till the summer, not only just to potentially come to Aston Villa, but to see what else is sort of on the card.
Yep.
Because I think if you look at most of Europe's top teams, I don't think there's very, like, there's too many teams that would say no to a right back or a right wing back, or, you know, a player of Frimpong's stature. Certainly, you know, throwing Alonso's name into the hat with Real Madrid, he's a player who you could certainly see at Real Madrid as well, really, isn't he? You know, I think they're sort of, that right-hand side for Madrid is starting to get on a little bit now. When you look at Carvajal, he's probably 34, 35. Lucas Vazquez has been filling in there at time to time. Nacho Fernandez seems to play everywhere in defence for Real Madrid as well. There hasn't been any links, but, you know, this is the sort of profile of player which you would see go to Madrid and just shine. So he's going to want to hold out, isn't he, mate?
Yeah, for sure. And he'd be well within his rights to say that he's kind of ticked off the British Isles. You know, he came through at Man City, spent 9 years in their youth academy. The green and white inclined Villa fans amongst us will know that he had a very successful 2 years at Celtic, really impressed there with the young player of the season in 1920 before his move to Leverkusen in 2021. So, yeah, you know, he'd be well within his mind to say he'd like to cast his net further afield. We are shopping at the true top tier of fullbacks in Europe. And so, yeah, when you're in the conversation with, as you say, these top teams, mate, Villa really have to kind of throw their weight about. But we kind of could be helped by Bailey and Diaby, who have kind of both come in, thankfully, particularly Bailey really started to find his feet recently, and so can hopefully speak well for that pathway. But we shall see.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And like, he just looks after the ball so well. Just to briefly reel out some numbers before we move on. He's averaging 5.13 progressive carries per 90, 2.31 successful take-ons per 90, 5.47 touches in the attacking penalty area, and he's receiving 11.09 progressive passes per 90, all of which put him within the top 1% of fullbacks in the entire world over the last year. The guy's numbers are crazy. His output's crazy. really classy operator, and this is one to 100% keep your eye out for in the summer. In the summer. But you mentioned Acuña. I feel like we've done him to death, really. And I think the only sort of bit of insight or, you know, knowledge or whatever from me is with Luca Dean and Alex Moreno playing as they are, this seems like a bit of a weird signing at this point. Like, the last time we spoke about it, we were obviously looking at it through the lens of Luca Dean had offers from Saudi Arabia, he had offers from Nice, and he was potentially leaving. And it's like, well, we're obviously going to need another left back, somebody who can provide competition. But I think it's fair to say that Dean has actually been our best left back this season. So unless one of Dean or Moreno is all of a sudden going to leave in January or the summer, to sign a third player who can play in that position, and listen, I know that he can cover the wing, I know he can cover left midfield, I know he could even cover centre midfield in a midfield three if he had to, it just doesn't really seem to add up. And the fee is only 8 million euros, which has been touted, mate, but when you consider age, the depth in that position already, and all these things, I'm struggling to see where the truth lies in sort of these rumours for our interest in Acuña.
Yeah, so he's 32. You know, we both kind of ummed and ahed on his age last year when he was 31, for the mathematicians out there. That one was for you. But yeah, you're right. So he kind of played as a left midfielder, left winger in the World Cup, Argentina's successful run all the way to the trophy. He was kind of used as a bit of a utility figure in that run, and that is what he's good at. 8 million, dare I say, for a player of his age. He's an amazing player, one of the premier left-sided defenders in La Liga, but feels a little bit high. But I dare say his wages would be significantly smaller than Luca Dean, who's on apparently around £120,000 a week. He's one of the top earners at the club. We had to really pay him big bucks to ward off other interests when we signed him from Everton. So when you look at kind of Acuña and maybe look at it in that gaze, maybe, you know, we're trying to balance the book a little bit ahead of some big summer spending should we achieve our goals and end up in European football. I don't know if it's a reach to say it starts to make sense, but Dean's only, you know, he's 30 himself. He'll turn 31 in the summer. So there's not a huge disparity in age between those two players. It's just interesting because Acuña has not been the type of player that we've been going for. All the leaks, you know, that we've seen so far this window, Jeremy Frimpong, we're going to talk about Cyril Nkongi in a second, Matt O'Reilly at Celtic, I saw linked with today. All of them are really exciting young players by and large. And Acuña has been the outlier and has been. We wanted him desperately in the summer. We know that we wanted him in January last year as well. There definitely seems to be some truth there. You've obviously got the whole Monchi connections with Sevilla. Obviously, you and I spent some time there as well. That's how those two really got to know each other. So you can see where the interest is coming from. It's just in and amongst our other transfer business, it kind of looks a little bit offset from the rest.
Yeah, it does. It does. And I think as well, like, and maybe I'm looking into this too deeply here, but you see on Luca Dean's story all the time how much of a sort of family man he is on the socials. He's always sort of doing stuff with the kids. He's this and that. Like, I don't see a move to Saudi fitting the lifestyle for the Dean family. That, like, they seem to be pretty settled where they're at. So, you know, obviously it would make sense to be considering moving Luca on at some point, but given his form and given how happy he seems to be in Birmingham, you know, something just doesn't necessarily seem right. But, you know, as you say, it's a player that Monchi knows. It's a player who has, you know, has won everything there is to win. He's reached the pinnacle of football, won the World Cup. Somebody who obviously Emmy, both of them would know well to a certain degree. So yeah, it's an interesting one, mate. But Cyril Nkongi, this one almost had sort of looked like it had been Nkongi. That was a terrible pun. I'm so sorry. That was dreadful. I promise I'll never do that again. But the sort of the rumors came up for him the other day, and it looked like he was, you know, potentially not interested in the move to Aston Villa, and that Fiorentina were after him. But now Tuto Mercato are reporting that, you know, we found an agreement with Hellas Verona to sign him for 10 million euros. And this is a player that I can't say I'm too clued up on. But, you know, he's a forward player. And I think, you know, there's been a few comments and I've mentioned it a few times. I want Dom Solanke. This is the guy who I think Aston Villa needs to go out and get in that position up front. So it's interesting to see that we're looking somewhere else. And again, you know, to sort of repeat the point from the Frimpong section earlier, Solanke will be a summer signing. Dom Solanke is going nowhere in January. He is key to everything that Bournemouth do, especially in terms of, you know, they're looking fairly comfortable now. It looks like they probably won't get relegated, but, you know, should you sell your star striker, that is the difference between staying up and going down. So that's obviously something that isn't going to happen now. John Duran, I think, you know, this raises questions for John Duran, really, doesn't it, mate? Because he has been linked with AC Milan, I believe it was. And it looks like they have to lose one non-EU registered player in order to sign him due to league rules. But, you know, due to the uncertainty of that, you know, maybe look to sort of bring somebody else in who's a bit more ready than John Duran is, or maybe somebody who is singing from the same hymn sheet, you know, if you to believe reports with, you know, about the friction between Unai and John Duran. Then, you know, sort of looking at it through that perspective, this deal starts to make a little bit more sense, doesn't it, mate? And obviously, Monchi isn't going to sign Solanke just because I want him to.
No, this is Monchi written all over it. This is what he does. This is what he does. We're going to see a lot more like this, dare I say, Villa fans. This is where Monchi earns his name. He kind of picks from these leagues and in Europe with teams that perhaps we're not as familiar with to go in and find the bargains. He's a mastermind in the transfer market. And so, yeah, I dare say before his time is out in B6, we'll see a few more names like this. But there's no doubt he's an exciting player. 23 years old, 5 goals and 2 assists from 17 appearances so far in a Hellasburg side that are really, really struggling. I think that's important to say. Those numbers might not blow you away, but when you consider they're 17th, they've won just 3 games this season and have scored just 15 goals in 18 games, you begin to look at his share of those 15 goals and suddenly it all starts to feel a little bit more impressive. So there's no doubt that he's a talent there. You know, he's a product of the Club Brugge Academy. He's come through various different clubs to kind of get to this point, spent a bit of time in the Netherlands with Young PSV, with Groningen, and has ended up in Serie A. And yeah, you can kind of feel it. That pathway to Fiorentina feels like a really natural step up. And it's interesting that, if this rumors are true, that we are battling Fiorentina to the extent that we are at. It's also quite interesting that he's leaving at this point. I know they're in a relegation battle and nobody wants a relegation on their CV, but he's not actually been there for a full season. He joined last January, so he's only played the back half of last season and the first half of this season. So he's yet to complete a full season with Hellas Verona. It's a fair bit of money for him. Obviously, it's more than they signed him for, so they'll be happy to take a profit. The Serie A strugglers accepting that fee, as you say, about €10 million, £8.7 million. So it's no, you know, this is no slither. That's still a fair portion of, you know, I mentioned that we spend by and large about £20 million in the January window. This is a fair chunk of that. And so Monchi's reportedly held talks. Apparently, we're trying to agree on personal terms. But there, you know, you expect that they wouldn't be a problem. And if it all goes to plan, he can play on the wing, he can play up front, he can play through the middle. He's quite versatile. And so, yeah, move to the Premier League would definitely boost his profile. But I remain keen to see. It's interesting that sources in England don't seem to have picked up on this. You know, you write through The Athletic, who are usually very accurate. You know, the user faces Greg Evans, John Percy, all those guys that are usually on the money when it comes to Villa transfers. They're silent on this. It's sources in Italy that are kind of leading it.
Yeah, I think, and like, as you said, mate, I think we're going to see more of this, really. Like, this isn't necessarily, I think there clearly are, like, still people at the club, like the kind of people who are sort of feeding information. Where that comes from, you know, obviously we don't know because we don't get that information. But the guys who know generally know, you know. Percy is always on the, like, if it's not from Percy, it's generally not happening, is it? But it's interesting because obviously, like, in terms of scouting and recruitment now, like, the net's cast so much wider than it ever has been before. Even the signing of John Duran, like, came out of nowhere. Like that is one that really caught it off guard, not only just in sort of profile, but just like the league, all that kind of thing. So it's going to be interesting to see how this one develops. But like, it's fair to say, it's definitely a position that we need to strengthen. And it's, you know, hopefully, whether it's in January or in the summer, it's something that's addressed. Because again, you know, like we're talking about, thankfully, we don't have a European game until March now, but should we advance, and knock on wood, everything goes well and we end up in Athens, and obviously we've got the FA Cup tie against Middlesbrough to talk about as well. We're talking about, you know, this is still, the squad depth isn't where it should be. So positions need addressing, and obviously it's good to see with all these inks, mate, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. I think one last thing just to throw in on this one, it's interesting. Bertrand Traoré is a player that's very key to this, because not only is he off to AFCON in January, but the real significance of that is not even that he won't be able to play for Villa, it's that his contract is up at the end of the season. And so because he's away with Burkina Faso playing in AFCON, we're not really able to put him in the shop window as we'd like to try and get him gone, if we can get a fee for Bertrand Traoré kind of in this January window. That you kind of imagine a fully fit, fully foreign Bertrand Traoré maybe doesn't command up to 10 million euros, but it's kind of around that. And so when you consider that maybe we'll be with him in January, and then you have to assume we're not going to extend Bertrand Traoré, so that he's going to be off at the end of the season, that's the kind of role in the squad that he might fill.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a very good point that I neglected to consider. So that is obviously good to know. But as well, like, we have outgoings. One that is obviously tied directly to this game at the weekend, which we will briefly talk about, in Finn Azasta, Middlesbrough, seemingly £2.5 million. You would imagine there's a sell-on fee in there. Michael Carrick has said today that he will be available. He'll be in the squad for the weekend. I've seen the script already. Finn Azaz, 90th minute winner. It's all there. It's all there. But this is a really interesting one. You know, he's had a really good time at Argyle over a couple of spells. He's got quite a few goals this season as well. I think everyone has seen his goal recently at the weekend. I think it was against Blackburn, maybe. Correct me if I'm wrong. Absolute peacher of a goal. And it's a shame, because I think he sort of arrived at the club about 3 years ago, never really got a proper look in, but he's 23 years old and we didn't pay a fee for him. He's one of those guys who sort of came across, was it Mark Harrison? I can't remember the guy's name, who sort of came from West Brom to run the academy, sort of brought him over with him as well. And it was a weird one, because he was like 19 at the time, around that sort of age, 19, 20. And he sort of leaves now as a 23-year-old, having never really sort of had the chance to sort of play for Aston Villa. So it's quite interesting, but obviously we're making £2.5 million from this for somebody who, you know, we haven't paid a fee for. I imagine the wages were tiny anyway, and, you know, maybe Argyle covered a portion of them while he was on his various loans there as well. But it's an interesting one, mate, because, yeah, I feel like at the time, like, I feel like this is probably just what we're going to see from the academy now, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
we've saw a lot of business being done, I guess, in the summer with Aaron and Cam leaving, and, you know, there's talk of Tim potentially leaving, maybe on loan in this window as well. I guess it's something we're going to have to get used to. And, like, listen, am I upset that we're selling Finn Azaz? Absolutely not. I think, again, we're sort of, I can only sort of express my condolences in a way to these players that are sort of getting eaten up by Villa's success. It's a case of the trajectory we're on now. I think we are sort of outgrowing some of these guys who, maybe if we were sort of languishing in mid-table or sort of battling relegation, maybe would have got a bit more of a look in at the club earlier on.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right, mate. He's one of those kind of crazy players that is almost, he's almost too old. Seems crazy to say, doesn't it, at 23, but players just don't through at 23 anymore. You know, you only have to look at the amount of 23-year-olds playing under 23 football, which is not a lot. It's all teenagers, to show that the age that players come through now is just so young. And you kind of look at him at 23, and whilst that's still so young, it almost kind of feels that you just can't, you're not going to, it's not going to happen for him at that stage, which is a shame because everywhere he's gone, every week you see incredible goals. He seems to have really mastered the lower leagues. You know, he's won League Two with Cheltenham whilst he was on loan there from West Brom. He's won League One with Plymouth Argyle last season. He's runner-up in the EFL Trophy, League Two, Young Player of the Season. He's, you know, he's done it all in the lower leagues, scored some fantastic goals, is impressed wherever he's gone. I think 2.5 million feels like a snip. I think he'll do really well at lower. Definitely feels like a player you could see rocking up a kind of lower-end Premier League team over the next couple of years. He's a fantastic, fantastic player and one that I've always been really keen to try and see a bit of in Claret and Blue, but it's never quite happened. And so, yeah, it's a shame, but yeah, crazy to say it's kind of happened a bit too late for him. And yeah, it's a nice kind of full circle moment for him being able to play, hopefully against the Villa at the week, hopefully for him that is against the Villa this weekend. But he needs a permanent home. That's what I always say with these guys. You know, he's 23. He's been at, what is it, 5 different clubs already, 4 loans in that time. The only 2 sides he's ever been affiliated with on a long-term contract, West Brom and Villa, he's never made a competitive appearance for. So this guy definitely needs a permanent home. Michael Carrick, Borough, feels like a team that are going to be going places over the next few seasons. It's definitely an appealing option. Obviously, he's staying in the same league, but, you know, Middlesbrough, you feel have, and this is no disrespect to Plymouth Argyle, have done fantastic things recently, but obviously they've lost their manager in Schumacher, and it kind of feels that that club could be kind of up in the air over the coming seasons, whereas Borough, you can definitely see the vision there. And so it's definitely an appealing option. I can see why you'd want to make it. But yeah, it's kind of, I don't know, I feel kind of weird attachment to Fidesz. I don't really know why. It's because he's done such a fantastic job wherever he's been, I think.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you want to see guys go out, get the experience and have a chance, right? That's football. Mm. That's, you know, there's every, you know, he's a sort of semi-local lad. I know he's sort of Irish. But it's one of them things. Like, it's a nice story, but no time for sentiments at Aston Villa because we're going to win everything. 100%. And unfortunately, that is without Fidesz. But yeah, hopefully he has, you know, finds his feet at Borough. And obviously there's the connection with Coach Danks as well, who mm-hmm. obviously know a fair bit about him, you would imagine. But yeah, I mean, before we sort of briefly touch on Middlesbrough, mate, I know we don't have a lot of time left. Just want to give a shout out to Tom Heaton. Tom Heaton, oh my God, why am I saying Tom Heaton? It's not Tom Heaton. Jed Steer. I don't know where Tom Heaton came from. I can only apologise.
Shout out to Tom Heaton as well.
Yeah, seems like a top bloke. Shout out to Tom. But Jed Steer, he's got a new club, mate, hasn't he? And I'm really happy for him because it feels like it's been forever he's been a free agent. I think his deal only expired in the summer, but yeah, he kind of never really got a look in after the sort of survival season where he sort of rotated a little bit with Nyland. But Jed Steer is, you know, I think like the thing is every club has a character like Jed where they're probably a little bit underappreciated, didn't get to contribute as much as they probably would have liked. But, you know, he will be famous for that promotion season. He will be famous for staring down Mason Holgate in the way that he did and coming up clutch in the semi-final against West Brom. That's something that we will all take to the grave with us. Fantastic memories. And again, you know, like for Jed, it's kind of different because he has been at Villa for like, I think it's like nearly 15 years, which is like grounds for testimonial under normal circumstances. But he just never really played. So hopefully he can sort of find a home, find his feet at Peterborough. And hopefully that short deal gets extended into something longer.
Yeah, it's interesting because he got released by Villa 2023, so earlier this year. He was actually signed as a free agent by myself. Chesterfield did a great job for us in League 2 on Football Manager, so shout out to you, Jed. Not that he knows anything about that. But yeah, happens for him, man. Love to see it. Streets won't forget Jed Steer.
Absolutely, absolutely. But mate, we've got this game with Middlesbrough coming up. And it's a bit of an interesting time for them because they play Chelsea in the League Cup a week after. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I work with a Middlesbrough fan, speaking to him, he's not feeling very confident. Naturally, he is for the Chelsea game because he would be. But it sounds like their squad is in disarray at the moment, you know, riddled with injuries. They've really struggled this season, down towards the bottom of the championship. And, you know, I think you could probably pin a large portion of that to losing Cameron Archer and Aaron Ramsey. But as well, you know, the Chuba Akpom moves to Ajax. The squad has sort of slowly been dismantled, and it isn't what it was. It isn't the force of nature that Middlesbrough were last season. So, you know, all things here, as we've already said, points away a 1-0 Middlesbrough win with a Finnezas goal, don't it, mate?
Yes, mate. I remember the defeat last season to Stevenage and doing a short. And the numbers have come back around, and I'm looking at them right now, and I don't even want to say it. I don't want to voice it on the podcast. I don't want to say this stat again, so please to God, Villa win this game. Since beating Wycombe Wanderers in a third round replay in 2016, Aston Villa have lost 8 FA Cup third round matches in a row. No side in English football ever has lost 9 in a row whilst playing in England's top 2 divisions. This would be literally an all-time low for Villa in the FA Cup. No top flight side has ever gone out in consecutive top 5 seasons at this stage 5 times in a row since Blackpool in 1961 and then 1966-67. So these are the levels that we're talking. I cannot express for my sanity how important it is for Villa to win this game. However, I have done some digging, and I've got one positive stat. Literally, I have, given Villa's form in the FA Cup, I've had to dig so far to get this number. But when Villa last won the FA Cup, which was, I'm going to say this really quietly because it's kind of embarrassing, 1957, the Villans faced Middlesbrough in the third round, and we beat them 3-2. And that year, we went on to win the FA Cup. So,
good omens.
Is loose, mate. I won't lie. Not exactly the most concrete statistics I'd like to be able to provide. That's literally as best I've got, because we've been garbage in the FA Cup for the longest time. It doesn't even feel like you can count that 2016 win over Wycombe, because it was a replay. We were dreadful in that way. So it kind of feels like that's a cheat in itself. So yes, to save everyone's sanity, we need to win this game. And it's really important, because the Cups have been the one thing that Unai hasn't been able to get a grip on. It's been amazing. A star in every other category, but it's cup competitions, a loss to Stevenage, and then that loss to Everton so far this season that are kind of staining his record. So a decent run in the cup is the only thing we've been missing under Unai.
It is. And it's the one thing you'd think that he could manage, because he can manage rotating Europe, hasn't managed to crack it yet with Villa, but it's certainly for fans of a certain generation, mate. And by a certain generation, I mean our generation. Some of the only enjoyable times watching Aston Villa have actually come in the FA Cup. You think of that famous run under Tim Sherwood, beating the Baggies at home, 4-3 last minute penalty from Benteke, wasn't it? Where Scott Sinclair scored the couple. Beating Liverpool as well in the semi-finals. Like, I know obviously we go on and lose the final 5-0, but like these are sort of the games that we remember. Being in high school, watching the Villa, some of the only good times really for us supporting the club. Yeah. And you think, mate, there's going to be a whole generation of fans that have come after us that haven't seen us do well in the FA Cup. So,
yeah, crazy.
Do it for them kids, man. Do it for the kids. Do it for us. Do it for the big kids as well. Like the FA Cup is such a prestigious trophy. Like, I know we've sort of been carried away and talking about, like, title race, this, that, Europe, Champions League. We end the season with a trophy and it's the FA Cup. I would be made up if it's the only thing we win.
Without a doubt.
Like, we need to start taking this seriously. And when you look at the fact that there's like already draws like Liverpool, Arsenal, immediately taking out some of the big teams, like, let's fucking go for it. Do you know what I mean? Let's give us a cup run. Let's go.
Let's go. The way we sit here and dissect this defeat on Saturday is going to be heartbreaking, because right now I'm so excited. But mate, I mean, come on.
If we lose, there's no podcast. I'm sorry. If we lose this, we're not.
We're not doing it.
This is your warning, guys. We're not talking about the game if we lose.
I did like a 30-second short after the Stevenage game. Yeah. I couldn't face doing a podcast on it. And that was tough enough. I cannot sit here and dissect a defeat. So please to God, please to God. I'm staring. I can't face these kind of numbers. Middlesbrough are great against Premier League teams in the FA Cup. They've not been a Premier League side in the third round since the turn of the millennium, 2001. They've lost all five games since then. We obviously had some success against them. I mean, I'm really clutching the straws here in the playoff semi-final. Beat them away, Mile Jedinak at the near post. So this was hard. Some good omens there, but we do have to really dig. And so, you know, you want to see the Villa go full strength, you know, no days off. You want to see the big guns play here because you want no excuses. It's a chance to really, you know, the FA Cup, winning any trophy just buys you so much time. And, you know, like, unites everybody at the club. It, you know, kind of, people spoke about it with Newcastle last season, didn't they? I know it was the Carabao Cup, when they got to the final, it kind of kickstarts a new era. And that piece of silverware early on just really puts you on such an upwards trajectory. And at this time, you know, we really, really need that. And so,
yeah, come on. Give us the cup run. Come on, please. We're not asking for a lot, but guys, there's less than a minute left of this Zoom recording. Didn't think we'd gone on for that long, but clearly we have. So I have to say thank you if you've made it all the way. Let us know your thoughts on the transfers in the comment section down below. And here's up with your score predictions for this game. Like, comment, subscribe, and up the Villa.